What kind of circumstance were you in on the street?
Well, I bounced in here in a hurry, and I just gotten out of jail, and I didn't have a place to stay, and I didn't have a job at the time. I was going blind in both my eyes. I had severe cataracts. I couldn't see. And I went through major surgery for gangrene poison. I almost died. And the county said that they were going to help me find housing when I got out, you know, when they cut me loose. And they gave me the streets in Oxford. You know, no help at all. And I was blind, and if it wasn't for these people on the streets helping me, I don't know what the hell I would have done.
Bob, can you tell people a little bit about yourself?
Well, I have diabetes, and I have hepatitis C, and COPD. I'm only 44, but I have all those ailments. And to be quite honest with you, managing diabetes when you have a place to live is sometimes difficult. But imagine when you don't have a choice of what there is to eat that day, and diabetics have to follow a very strict diet. And unfortunately for myself, I can't do that.
Well, you're in a shelter, correct?
Correct.
And they know you have diabetes?
Correct.
And are they nice to you about it? Do they do their best, or they make no effort? How would you characterize it?
Does not apply. And now I live off of a $496 a month SSI check.
Well, now, that was a point I wanted to get to, Bob.
Yes, I knew you did, so that's why I was heading in that direction.
You're getting a disability check. Now, that means, as I understand the meaning of disability, that you've been inspected and detected, and you've been ruled truly needy. Somebody looked at you and said, he's not faking it, he's got a problem, correct?
Absolutely.
And then, after you've gone through all of that...
Right.
They still don't give you enough money to get a house.
No.
Well, what sense does that make?
You tell me.
I got my disability, but it took a long time to get it, and I'm trying to live on that.
And how much do you get for disability, if I may?
I'm $553 a month.
So you're in the same category, then, that Bob is in. You're getting not much money, and you've been inspected and detected and found to be disabled as well.
Well, Social Security picked the doctors. I didn't pick the doctors who did the evaluations. And $553 a month, you cannot rent an apartment in Portland for $550 a month.
I really want to drive this point home, that you went to these doctors. You said, I got a medical condition.
Correct.
Social Security picked the doctors.
That's right.
And Social Security said, their doctor said, this guy is not lying. He has got a medical condition that disables him and keeps him from working. That is true?
Permanent disability. That's true.
So you got certified, and they still won't give you enough money for a house.
They don't give enough.
And if you went to Social Security, did you ever say to them, this isn't enough money to live on?
Well, I don't think they really care. this is what you get, and you know, make do.
Ron, did you ever have the experience, of going to some kind of social welfare office? I don't know which office you'd have gone to, county, state, whatever, and saying, hey, guys, I'm nearly blind. I got gangrene. I got every kind of problem. I can't work. Can you help me? And did they give you adequate help?
Are you kidding me? You make me laugh.
Are you at Preble Street, where you do outreach for homeless people? Is the state calling you up and saying, we have more money than we know what to do with? Can we send you more? Can we send you more? Please spend more money. Is that the problem you're facing?
I would love to take those phone calls if they existed. At this point, the state of Maine is facing a $1 billion deficit, which for a small, rural, poor state is really huge. And we've also seen funds for general assistance, which generally help people out to pay rent when they lose a job or become sick or meet other necessities for living. Those funds have plummeted over the last 10 years. There used to be a budget of about $16 million, I think it was, and now it's only about $4 million for the entire state. So as those numbers have fallen, numbers of homeless people have risen, and we have seen huge increases in the use of the overnight shelters and the soup kitchens and the social services that are designated for homeless people.
I've looked at some figures for Oxford Street and for the family shelter, and the number of bed nights just over in the last 5 years has more than doubled, according to what I've seen.
Yes, yes. And one of the things that we've found, too, is that when we did the point-in-time survey for HUD, because there are HUD funds that support that shelter, that 63% of respondents were first-time users of the shelter that year. So not only are we seeing an increase, but an increase of new people who are homeless.
Hearing that, guess what? You just lost your funding. It's not a nice thing.
No, can you imagine being somebody who's been homeless, living on the streets, and was then able to qualify for Shelter Plus Care, which is a program for people with mental illness and who are homeless. And maybe you've been stable for 2 or 3 years, and then to hear that your housing is not going to be available to you because HUD decided to cut its budget.
This has happened?
Yes, it has happened, and it's going to be happening in greater numbers, actually. As HUD shrinks its budget, these are the types of programs that are going to be cut. And it's not because these programs are not successful. Shelter Plus Care is extremely successful, especially in Maine. And yet, we have fought to keep this program open at different times. And we know many of us know people personally whose lives have greatly benefited from having shelter. And yet, this, you know, we fear that many of these people will be homeless again.
But I suspect that the good Lord, our Creator, and I carried a little Bible with me all my life as a source of strength, even as a police officer. I didn't consider the firearm my strength, my love of fellow people, and the Word of God. And I suspect that God does put people out here who are homeless, and I caution all others. I sincerely caution all others who don't live what they live to be very careful when you approach these people and look at them as being less, because in more cases, they are not less. They're a test for mankind to keep their heart open.
Christopher, you're homeless right now.
Yes, yes, sir.
And, well, you don't have to call me sir. I mean, I go by the name Nobody, so we haven't gotten to the point of Sir Nobody yet. but, Christopher, what from what you've seen, and I'm not saying you've done a survey across the nation, but from what you've seen, what's the difference between being homeless at 21 and some of the older people that you see who are homeless? What's different in your situation?
Well, my situation, I mean, I've been pretty much homeless off and on since I was 16 years old. And, you know, a lot of the blame for my being homeless is on myself. And then at the same time, you know, if, you know, older people that got, you know, a lot more options out there for them, a lot more, you know, people that are handicapped, things like that, and they're homeless, they get a lot more help from the states, you know, cities and things like that. Whereas if you're 17, 18 years old and you're on the streets and you're trying to get some help from the city, most of the time they're like, well, you know, he's just, you know, either a punk kid or, you know, he's out there doing drugs or something like that. And then they don't really want to help you out. Instead, they'd rather put you, you know, and this topic was brought up the last hour, you know, they'd rather arrest you and put you in jail or, you know, something like that to get you off the streets because they feel like you're just going to be trouble.
We have a caller on the line, so people want to ask you questions. So let's take a call. Those numbers again to call in here are 877-NOBODY-8 or 866-LEFT-OUT. We have on the line Leslie. I'm not sure from where. Leslie, welcome to the Homelessness Marathon.
Hi.
Hi, Leslie. Where are you from?
Actually, I'm from Augusta, but we're staying in East Winthrop.
So you're in Maine?
Yeah.
Okay, Leslie. And are you a homeless person or are you a...
Yes, my daughter and I are both homeless.
Okay, well, we're sorry to hear
all
that.
All of us, I include our cat in that. My daughter has a service animal and it's a cat.
Okay, well, we're sorry to hear you're homeless, but we're glad to hear from you. So what would you like to say, Leslie, to my panel, and what would you like to say to the nation?
Well, to your panel, I got to tell you, we're both handicapped.
Okay.
And I have been raising my daughter, who's 13 now, on my Social Security disability. I have DJD, which is basically different forms of arthritis, and that's my major disabling condition. And after becoming disabled, we had a car accident, so I became even more disabled. And with $734 presently as our monthly income, we don't qualify for a lot of programs.
Because you're too rich? You're too rich on $734?
Yeah, on $734, we are too rich. And when I hear somebody on your panel thinking that the handicapped get more help, in some cases they do get a different program. But it's sort of like you have to be labeled five times before you get anything. And if you can't be labeled those five times, you get nothing, or you get one thing.
Leslie, let me ask you this.
We got Section 8 housing, and that's helpful, but we lost our housing because of Section 8 housing.
Okay. For people who don't know, Section 8 is the housing voucher program through HUD.
Right. It's from HUD.
Yep.
And the way it works is you have to find a landlord willing to take Section 8, and you have to make sure that the apartment passes inspection. Once you get into an apartment, if the landlord does not keep your apartment in good repair, they can, what they do, they call it abating the rent. They will not pay your HUD portion of the rent, and you are then responsible for all of the rent. If you don't pay all of the rent, the landlord then can have you evicted. And sometimes, if you get evicted, it's going to hurt your eligibility for Section 8. So we had circumstances in which our apartment was not in good repair. HUD paid under Section 8.
Right.
For 4 years, we had the same place. And for 4 years, repairs were not made. So HUD was basically paying for 4 years a substandard apartment. And during the last 2 years, my daughter, who has a form of autism, became more harassed by kids in the neighborhood again and again and again and again, and things got worse. Our car got shot, and that wasn't any fun.
Hang on
so
a second.
So basically, it wasn't fun.
Leslie, where are you sleeping at night now?
Well, because I paid my bills very well on time on $734 a month, I was able to get a credit card. So I am using both my income and a credit card to stay at a motel in East Winthrop.
A lot of Americans will tell you they identify with that, about living on a credit card. Tina, do you identify with this being a mother, homeless? Were you able to be a good mother? Did your drug habit keep you from being a good mother? What's it like to be a homeless mother?
When I was homeless, my son, he was living with his father. We were having difficulty problems. We were married, and we were not getting along. I got married at the age of 17, and in my apartment. I mean, it wasn't even right. But when I left, because we were having problems, we talked about that he would stay there. My son would stay there at his father's house until I got on my feet and could take care of him. And when, I stayed at the shelter, I seen him whenever I wanted to. And, the hard thing is, you're not home at his house, laying next to your son. You're in a shelter laying next to somebody, that you don't know, could have any type of, disease or whatever. And that was scary for me. It was, but I always thought, I thought about my son until, I met, my fiance now. He's a great guy. He's helped me out totally. He's got me through, me being in rehab and stuff like that. And, he's totally willing to help me through anything now since he's been there for me. And he knows what I've been through. And, he's done it too. He was homeless living in New Hampshire. He went through the same thing that I went through.
Well, depression's a very, very known thing to me right now. I mean, I'm very depressed all the time, And Emma was just talking about how she was thinking about, giving her son up for adoption. Thing is that I currently have a son as well, and I don't see him. He's in Texas. And yet, as far as from where I stand, I think he's been given up for adoption. and I've had no way of contacting him or so much as even talking to his mother, and it's become a very hard thing for me to deal with every day. When I see these people that walk around with their kids every day, it hurts me, and it makes me want to just break down and cry every day that I see this. And, you know, if I could, I'd give up everything that I've done in my life just so I could spend one more minute with my son to tell him that I'm really sorry that I couldn't be there and be his father.
From Brazil, we have Heather Blanchard.
Hi.
Hi, Heather. You can hear me.
Good.
All right. Well, great. And Heather, you are a formerly homeless American, in fact, from Portland, Maine.
Yeah. So you want me to talk about the encampment that we saw?
Yeah. What have you seen down there? Yeah.
Okay. There's 2,000 families there with 2,400 kids from ages 0 to 12. Some of the people are from another group called La Maca, another encampment, and they were offered the space by the encampment Anita Garibaldi because they were kicked off where they were camping. It's unbelievable. I was just amazed by the sheer, the size of it. It's a huge encampment, as you can imagine, 2,000 families.
Put together by homeless people themselves.
Put together by homeless people themselves, and that's the thing that's really amazing, is they've pretty much constructed a whole village from nothing. And, it just kind of grabs you. You see how they've taken just pieces of wood, scrap pieces and things, and put them together and fix them up, and they put curtains in the window and plant plants outside. They have a community building. They have a pharmacy. They're giving classes, literacy classes. They've got a huge community garden, and they're planning on expanding that, and they're planning an herbal garden. It's just absolutely amazing.
I'm told that Walter is back. Walter, are you there?
Well, I'm here. I can hear you, Jimmy. I have no problem. Do you hear me?
Yes, we do hear you, and we're glad to have you with us.
Fine.
Walter, we were just hearing from Heather about Brazil, where you'd have a community of 2,000 homeless families making a whole life for themselves. Could we see a community of 2,000 homeless families in Switzerland?
Well, I think in Switzerland we do not have many homeless families or people. If you would go in a Swiss city or so in the evening now, for instance, where it is very cold or so, you would find maybe here and there a person, but they would be maybe rather a dozen or two living in the streets, but not hundreds or thousands of people and families. So in Switzerland, you would not find such a community, and maybe later I can give you some reasons why this is so. But I have to say that in Europe, the situation is quite different from one place to another. If you would be in London or in Paris, you would meet much more homeless people in the streets, evidently, than, for instance, in Switzerland or Denmark or Sweden.
Alex and Gretchen in Canada, you want to jump in and ask some questions?
Yeah, I'd like to ask Walter to tell us a bit more about the situation in Switzerland, because here in Canada, we have a massive problem with homelessness. And I wonder, how was Switzerland able to almost eradicate it with so few people in a situation where they don't have shelter?
Well, I'll try to answer that. I mean, first of all, there is a clear political conviction or a political commitment that homelessness is something we don't want to have in our cities. And therefore, communities are under a high pressure also to eradicate homelessness, because the public would not appreciate to have especially families without any homes in our streets. So that's the first thing. And from that on, I think you have to see that we have, on the one hand, social aid, which helps families to pay for their homes, and on the other hand, you have facilities or cheap housing, which allows people with difficulties to find their own place,
or what?
To get a place. So on the one hand, there is the financial support that families and people can get from the public to get housing, and on the other hand, there is to some extent an offer of cheap housing, which helps people with difficulties to find a home.
Anita, when you go to the government offices and say you need a house, what do?
They turn you down. It's too full. Everything is full. They turn you down. They say, come back tomorrow, come back the next day. And you've been doing it every day. Every day you've been doing the same thing.
And they know you have no place to stay?
They know. Yes, they know.
What do the politicians or the people in Philadelphia say if you explain their your situation? I mean, are they just saying we don't care, or how do they react to your situation?
I think that, like you say, they just don't care.
That's bad.
I mean, could this happen in Switzerland, Walter?
I think not, because if maybe in a single case it could happen a few days, but shortly after you may have this story in the press or so, and some pressure would be mounted to the public authorities to take care, especially if families are involved.
So you mean if there was like a worker for the government, someone said, I have no home, and they acted like they didn't care, that would make the papers, that'd be a scandal.
Yes, yes.
We have at the microphone here, in the cold and looking cold, we have Dave here in the Tower of Testimony here in Portland, Maine. Dave, welcome to the Homelessness Marathon.
Thank you.
Dave, are you a homeless man?
Actually, I have been more or less on and off now for the past 5-6 years.
Uh-huh. And where are you going to sleep tonight, dude?
There's a shelter here in Portland.
Mm-hmm.
Where I can stay.
Very good. And what would you like to say, Dave?
Well, I'm representing the coalition here in Portland.
The Support Coalition?
The coalition, Portland Coalition, is an organization that represents people that have been psychiatrically labeled.
Uh-huh.
And I wanted to suggest that while homelessness option isn't always an option, that mental health services aren't always necessary or aren't always the answer. And I'm grateful that we have shelter here in Portland where I can stay for a number of reasons, because I prefer to stay there than I would in a mental hospital.
I understand. Well, let me turn to Ann. You, please, if you can stay there for a minute, but let me ask you something, Ann. Look, they didn't have social workers at Auschwitz. And why not? Because everybody knew why they were there. They weren't there because they had a mental problem. They weren't there because they had a social problem. They were there because they were victims of a criminal tyranny. Is there a way in which you're just kind of, you know, putting a happy face on cruel social conditions? Or do you feel that your job is about more than that? I don't mean to put you on the spot, Ann, but, you know, I mean, are you just there to make it look like we've got a human system when, in fact, we don't?
Okay, I'm not on the spot, so, but I still got to answer this, right?
Yes. Okay, I did mean to put you on the spot, Ann.
Am I just trying to put a happy face on a horrible situation?
Something like that.
Yeah. I don't think there's any way that I could put a happy face on this kind of situation. I think that even if people are choosing to sleep out, and there are some people right now in Portland that are choosing to be outside, I think being able to make sure that they know what's available, that they can get health care as well as mental health care, that people are still interested and concerned, has a value so that they know that, and that not all of society really sees them as outcasts, and that there's some of us, you know, in communities all over the country that are not happy about it, so I wouldn't go along with that, but still have a commitment to seeing that people have what they need and what they want.
You know, as much as we hear people stigmatizing homeless people as mentally ill, is our society really giving the funds? Do you have enough in your agency to actually treat all these people if they want to be treated?
Probably not. So
So I want to open up tonight's questions about why are people homeless. And my first question would be, if one of you can touch on the state of homelessness currently in the country, and what are we talking about for size and composition?
Okay, I can take that one. Homeless size is very difficult to measure. Counting homeless people is kind of like herding cats. I mean, it's, you know, very difficult to locate everyone, to even come up with a definition of homelessness that everybody agrees on. And best estimates is there's, and then also counting on time frame, but best estimates on any given night, there's probably somewhere between 600,000 to 700,000 homeless people. You know, people homeless on a given night. If you take that, over the course, of a year, it expands about 2.3 to 3.5 million people are homeless over the course of a year. So homelessness affects considerably more people over a year than, you know, that you're aware of in any particular night.
Let's talk briefly about, I mean, we all know the stereotypes and the myths around homelessness. I mean, one of the biggest ones being all homeless people are basically drunk, crazy bums. What really is the composition of homelessness in the United States? What kind of people are we really talking about?
Certainly, you know, substance abuse, alcohol abuse is a big issue among the homeless. Advocates have downplayed it, researchers have downplayed it, and, you know, it's, the numbers say undeniably that it is an issue. Most, and again, this is something that's difficult to measure. You know, you're basically, you know, measuring an addiction in kind of a circumstances such as homelessness. A lot of times, you know, if someone is homeless and they get drunk once, is that the sign they have a problem, or is that just, you know, they happen to be homeless and doing something that if we were housed, it would not be looked upon as a problem. So the measurement gets to be a problem, but still, I mean, general estimates are anywhere between one third to one half of the homeless population has some type of a substance abuse problem, either alcohol or drugs. That being said, that's kind of a vague number, but what it does say is that for the homeless population, those type of issues tend to be larger problems than in the more general population. But it also, you know, it also raises, it also kind of brings, kind of highlights the issue that, it's, you know, what does this mean? This is not, you know, alcoholism, drug addiction is neither, you know, what we say in research is neither necessary nor sufficient to become homeless. And what that means is even if half of the population have those type of problems, you have at least half or probably the majority of homeless people who don't have such problems. And also you look at it the other way around, probably, you know, upwards of 95% of people in the general population who are either addicted to drugs or to alcohol are housed. So just, you know, alcoholism, drug addiction in and of itself does not cause homelessness. You need to combine that with poverty to produce homelessness. So it's neither necessary nor is it sufficient to produce homelessness. And a lot of times that gets distorted where someone says, you know, someone is homeless because they're drug addicted, because they're alcoholic. And that's really very simplistic and contributes to stereotypes, and it takes a lot more than that.
What can we expect for veterans returning from Iraq, and can we expect to see an increase in the number of homeless veterans after the war?
Homelessness has followed war ever since the Civil War. You know, once the Civil War ended, large numbers of soldiers, both from the Confederates and the Union, basically took to the roads. And that's really followed after World War One, World War Two to a lesser extent, but, you know, certainly after the Vietnam War, and no reason to believe that won't happen again.
There's another impact of the war, which is the impact on the economy. And we're seeing it now where in states across the nation, there's a war budget crisis going on, where states are having to choose between cutting you know, social services and cutting public education and funding Homeland Security. Here in California, everything in the state budget is being cut except for prisons, ironically.
I don't think that if the civil rights movement had waited for nonprofit agencies to bring about civil rights, we'd all still be standing in line. Blacks would still be standing in line for civil rights. And I think as long as we as homeless people are standing in line in front of nonprofits, we're not going to get an end to homelessness anywhere on earth.
Hi, I just want to say I think that Portland, they do a great job with the people here.
Mm-hmm.
They support us 100%. The food is great. They are kind. They are helpful. And the shelter itself is just incredible.
Our HUD funding is going to be cut. And I'm living on the streets right now at Oxford Street Shelter. And if our HUD funding is cut, and I don't know about how it's going to be in other states, I would be out in the cold. I would have no social work, no social help. Preble Street Resource Center, which is United Way funded, and I wouldn't have had medical attention. I wouldn't have had counseling. I owe really a lot to them. They would cut social work. They would cut Section 8. They would cut housing. And without all this, I'd have absolutely no chance of survival. And it makes it really difficult for people like me.
So you're afraid where we're going from here is we're going backwards, basically.
Backwards? We're doing a tube slide.
How are things in legal land as far as homelessness is concerned? Is city after city passing an ordinance that says homeless people are to be protected and we have to be very careful and watch out how you treat them?
Actually, it's the opposite. We are seeing a rise in the number of ordinances that target homeless people in an effort to drive them out of the cities. There are a growing number of ordinances that prohibit necessary life-sustaining activities that homeless people must engage in, including basic activities such as sleeping, activities such as sitting down on a public sidewalk, and simply trying to go about their daily day and try to improve their lives. The cities are making it far more difficult.
Now, I had thought there was a kind of historical process here because, in the 60s and stuff, all these vagrancy laws and stuff, I thought, got dropped from the books. Are we going kind of back to a previous period in American history?
Yes, we are going back. In some cases, cities are using old ordinances that have not been enforced for a number of years. In other cases, they are enacting new ordinances. But they are definitely going after homeless people more aggressively than in the past in many communities.
We have Brian from North Delaware on the line. I'm told you were never homeless, but came darn close, Brian.
Yeah, it's really amazing. People think, you know, that the homeless people are out there because they're lazy or they're addicted to drugs. But 2 years ago, I was injured in a car accident, and my auto insurance wouldn't pay for my health care. It wouldn't give me any kind of money for lost wages because they said I wasn't really injured. My health care insurance wouldn't pay for it because they said it was an auto accident. Now, if I wasn't married at the time, I would have lost my home. I would have lost everything because I had no income. And then, without an address, you can't even get Social Security. So people don't know how close they are. They're one paycheck away from being homeless. And this can happen to anybody. People who've worked all their lives, worked hard for everything, and the system is just against them.
Let me toss this to Laurel. Laurel, you know, it's another aspect of the legal situation, but how many people get caught in some kind of catch-22 and can't afford a lawyer and can't straighten their affairs out and become homeless that way?
Well, actually, that's a big problem. Some of what local legal services often see are people who have, for example, been evicted illegally. And there is a huge need for legal services out there that is not currently being met. There are offices around the country where legal services people will provide pro bono assistance. But it's severely underfunded, and there's a very high demand for legal services that's not being met. And the sad part about that is that if there were more legal services available, there are more people who would have avoided homelessness.
I can tell you that here in our community, we're able to serve with legal services about 2 in 10 people who come to us with legitimate legal concerns.
That's in Portland, Oregon?
Yeah.
A lot of people come to Central Florida thinking that their lives will change and their lives will be different. Working at Disney World is not living in fantasy land. Working at Disney World means earning $6.25 an hour, when the average two-bedroom apartment in Central Florida costs more than $800 a month. As a result, people end up homeless far from their homes.
You are so concentrated and focused on meeting the immediate need before you. It's only when, if and when, you pull yourself out of it by some miraculous, you know, series of events, and I do consider them miracles, that you look back saying, oh my gosh, how close to the edge we really were.
Well, I want to thank you very much for contributing that piece, and thank you very much for your call, Liz.
Thank you.
And we have James, who is a trucker from New York, who is on I-90 on the line. Are you driving while you're talking, James?
Yes, sir, I sure am.
Well, I don't. That's not even legal in New York, James. Can you make it quick?
I sure can, but I got hands-free, so it is legal.
Okay, well, I'm not comfortable with it, but say what you want to say.
Okay, yeah, I've been driving truck for almost 10 years now, and I've gone through just about every state in this country that you can get to by truck, and there is such a problem with the homeless. I mean, there's so many people that live day to day from paycheck to paycheck, and the whole thing from A to B needs to be worked on. There's so many people out there. There's veterans. It's unbelievable unless you actually get out here and you see what the problem is and see how many women and children are out here without homes and places to go to and food.
So you're saying you've been up and down this country and there's more of it than people realize?
Oh, there's so much of it, it's unbelievable. You go from New York City to Maine to Florida to California, you name it, Montana, Oregon, you name it. It's all over this country.
Mm-hmm.
And the people like the president, the high officials, are spending too much time worrying about other stuff than about taking care of the people that live in this country. I mean, there's farmers that I pass every summer that don't grow any type of corn or anything. They're empty fields out here. So many farmers out here can grow so much food to feed these people, and there's so many places to put them, but there's too many laws that say no, because they're not working, they're non-productive.
Right.
And you can't go get a job if you don't have clean clothes. Mm-hmm. Nobody's going to hire you.
James, I don't want to talk to you too long, just because I'm nervous about it, and I don't want to hear your brake screech, but let me ask you one last question, and then I want to let you go. But when truckers talk at truck stops and wherever you talk to truckers, do other truckers see what you see? Do you ever talk to the other truckers about this? Is this a common impression?
Yes, it is. You can go to any truck stop in this country, and any truck driver, if you sat down and had lunch with them or dinner or anything like that, would tell you. It's everywhere.
We have lost considerable ground in having the number of units that are necessary to house the entire population in some safe and decent way. In 1970, there was a surplus of housing units that were affordable to the lowest income households. Today, there's a dramatic shortage, as high as 5 million units short of what we need for the population that we have.
So many working people already can't or can just barely afford to live that if an injury, which is what happened to me, part of what happened to me, happens, you're just out. And what was really disturbing to me is that after having been a respected caregiver and stuff in my community, and in Mendocino County, it's like we're a big progressive activist community, and I'd been an activist for many, many, many years, for decades, and yet once I had dropped out of that respected position, once I was in a position of homelessness and need, I felt so strongly that people in my community just sort of backed away from me. There's this fear. It's almost like you have this communicable disease.
I'm Deb, and I work in Cambridge, Massachusetts, and I work for a nonprofit agency. And we supply furniture, moving up services, moving services and all. But we're having, all these places are having their budgets cut.
Right.
So that we're not able to supply. And we're getting to the point now where we're in danger because we do not have enough donations.
Let's make this clear for the people in America who are listening, though. You're saying to me, because I know that there are more homeless people on the street. U.S. Conference of Mayors is reporting that. That's not some radical idea. That's just the way it is.
Right.
There's more people on the street, Deb, and you're saying you're less able to help them.
Yes, because we do not have the funding. We do not have donations.
And is that something you're seeing with other agencies as well?
Because I am, because the agencies have given up and we're taking over their positions.
And you can't do it either?
No, we cannot.
Well, what's going to happen?
We are trying for more money. We're trying in different ways to raise funds.
I ain't been heard they cut the shelters down.
Yes, they did. Yes, they did.
It's really, what they want to do is put people in jail and slave labor.
Hasn't it been that way all along?
The thing I was going to talk about, I know, I realize the stigma, and I know often people talk about the interaction of law or criminalization of the poor or the homeless.
Yeah.
I can say that in Chicago, most police officers that I work with tend to have a very positive image of the homeless. They actually realize that they are marginalized. They tend not to want to arrest them. It's usually complaints from, I guess certain people that are uncomfortable with them, and if they can, they tend to avoid it and actually, I don't know what you would say, cut them a lot of slack, but see what's going on and are quite concerned with the situation.
Are you an outreach worker, sir?
No, I'm a regular police officer.
At least in Chicago, you're telling us we should understand that the police are not the enemy. The police do not feel themselves to be the enemies of the homeless people and are sympathetic and maybe wish the situation was a little better?
Absolutely. I mean, most policemen can barely make it in the city. If you've got a family, you can't make it on a wage to the policemen. They can't afford to buy a house in the city.
Yeah, I was homeless in Buffalo, New York, and it was, you know, I experienced wind chill factors of 60 below zero, so I got my butt to Los Angeles, and I was homeless in Los Angeles for a couple of years. I have HUD housing right now, but since Newt Gingrich did his contract on America, they kind of changed rules and stuff, and I have a teenage daughter, and under the new rules, you can only have a visitor for 5 days, even if it's your daughter, and I tried to get food stamps for her, and they just, like, threw out my paperwork 3 times in a row and made me start over again, and you know, I'm totally and permanently disabled, and to me it's like, how much money can I afford for food, how much money can I afford for medicine, how much pain can I stand, how much hunger can I stand?
Nitai, how much money do you get in your disability check every month?
Oh, we just got a $7 cost of living raise, so I get $7.57 because the state of California kicks in. And on a Medi-Cal sticker in California, there's practically no doctors that'll take it. And the doctors that do take it, it's just a joke. They just herd you through. One other thing I just wanted to say is that when you are homeless and it gets cold and you're shivering and, you know, I mean, I had friends, you know, and they would be, like, ready to commit suicide. And I'd say, you know, like, don't commit suicide. You know, whatever drug you have to take, whatever it takes to get you through the night, just do that.
What we're lacking in this country is not resources. We're lacking hope, and we're lacking an understanding of the history of how, in the past, we have pulled things together like the Wobblies did in their period, and we're successful. And if those stories are completely denied to us, we have no future. Will, welcome to the Homelessness Marathon.
Yeah, I just want to call and tell you what a miserable excuse this program is for hearing every radical, left-wing radical group and filth that's coming out of the woodwork. And I want to ask you, are you homeless?
Am I?
Yeah.
No, I am not. Thank God.
I didn't think so. And you make your money by creating this forum for these folks that want to tear down our country and bring down our country. And we're gonna kick Saddam's ass no matter what you guys do.
Okay. Well, let me ask you a question. What makes you think that I'm making money from this?
Well, how do you make your money?
I'm a pizza delivery guy.
Okay, and then what qualifies you to lead this miserable excuse of a program using the homeless to purport these radical ideas and these radical...
Let me ask you something, Will. What do you think we should do about homelessness in America?
First of all...
You're getting a chance to speak on this
first
program.
First of all, the reason that most people in America are homeless, okay, is because they want to be, okay? They want to be. They're drunks, drug addicts, and people that do not want to contribute to our society.
Jeff, I want to go to you. I mean, I want to talk about another aspect of this, which is never discussed, really, when we talk about healthcare and homelessness, which is how many people are homeless because of healthcare? How many people have been bankrupted by healthcare costs?
Unfortunately, we don't actually have data on that subject, but every Healthcare for the Homeless project that we've ever talked to has people they're working with who were indeed bankrupt by the for-profit healthcare system in the U.S. I work at a healthcare clinic in Baltimore, and on our board of directors, one of the first people on the board was this wonderful guy who was a merchant seaman, and his wife got cancer, and it bankrupted them. She died. He lost the house, and he was living on the streets, and that happens all too often.
Mm-hmm. Just to go back to something, Nate, that Will said, how many of the people you actually see, the clients who come into your clinic, I assume?
I'm not on the front line these days, but I have
but
been
you
for
have.
Many years. Sure.
And you talk to the people who are.
Sure.
How many of those people fit Will's characterization that these are just people who want to be homeless?
Well, I've been doing homeless work since the 70s, and I would say that it's an exception rather than the rule. It's an exception that that often gets held up by folks. And as Reagan used the welfare queen kind of
right. Nothing
example.
Wrong with it, by the way, if somebody wants to be a vagabond, right?
It's just not as the typical situation.
But no matter what somebody thinks, what we ought to do, or if they're Republican or Democrat, the reality is, philosophically aside, not talking about that, just who you see on the line, they don't want to be homeless.
They don't want this condition. That's true. And I think, in my opinion, when people say that someone chose this, I think you got to question what were their choices. If this was the choice, for many people, you might you see young people leaving very abusive, terrible situations and chose to hit the streets. Well, their other choices in their mind weren't very good.
Paul from Sacramento. Paul, welcome to the Homelessness Marathon.
Hello, nobody. This is Paul. I'm 55 years old, and I live in a board and care facility, which is paid for by Social Security, room and board,
uh-huh.
and I get $81 on the 1st and the 15th from SSI as personal incidental money, and I am provided with health care, have a Medi-Cal card from the state of California. I can use that many doctors. I can always find a doctor. They can help me, dentists and everything.
Paul, you've been able to stay in touch with doctors and stuff even if you're broke.
Sure.
Well, that's wonderful.
No problem. I just have insurance, and I get a card with my Social Security number on it, and and the and number nine at the end of it, and then all I do is memorize my social security number, and anybody knows that one, and you can just walk into a doctor and say your social security number and your name, and the doctor will serve you.
Well, Jeff, why do we hear this, that there are doctors who don't want to take federal program cards and stuff like that?
There are doctors that don't, you know. There are doctors that don't, and dentists that don't, but you can always find a clinic that does take you.
Jeff, Jeff Singer, yeah. From National Healthcare for the Homeless, from a national perspective, how effective is a Medicaid card?
A Medicaid card generally is pretty effective. The problem is that most people aren't eligible for them. We've just published two newsletters on the Medicaid crisis, because believe me, it is now a crisis. Most states, 46 states, are now planning to cut their Medicaid programs. 50,000 poor people in Massachusetts lost their Medicaid just a few weeks ago. The same number in Tennessee are losing their Medicaid. All over the country, because of this budget crisis, states are cutting back.
Yeah, I hear you.
But even before that happened, most poor and homeless people weren't eligible for Medicaid.
Would I be correct if I thought that America's second harvest is just awash with food? It's just rotting in the warehouses. You have so much more food than there is demand out there in this country that, it's really a shame to see all that food go to waste.
Well, I think not. You would not be correct. There's no place, to my knowledge, like that in America. The demand has never really been met. At least if it has been met, it's that silent, invisible moment, when everybody is food secure. I don't believe that's occurred in America, not in modern times anyhow. And clearly, with the difficulties that have been added, the downturn in the economy over the last year and a half, 2 years, every report is that the lines are longer, much longer. And every day, there's unfortunately people who are in those lines when the doors are shut. And certainly they'll be in those lines hours before the doors are open.
So that we understand this, you are saying that for most of your life, you were a person who lived in a house.
Well, ironically, I did have a nice, extravagant lifestyle. I had three homes. And I also started a program in 1998, which was called Dignity for the Homeless in the state of Arkansas. And I never wanted for anything, but after I was divorced, things started going downhill for me, and I was in an accident that was not the greatest thing to happen, and I became disabled from the accident, and everything started going downhill ever since.
Are you somebody who would say, I never thought this could happen to me?
Definitely.
Has this experience changed you? Have you learned something now that you've been facing this personally that you didn't understand before, and if so, what is it?
Yes, I'm really glad you asked that question. I have learned a lot. And the very first thing that I have learned is to appreciate. I took for granted going to Walmart, getting a 12-pack of soda. I used to take for granted going and buying a $15 pizza. I have learned to really appreciate just being able to, be able to take a shower, be able to eat, be able to have clothes to wear.
Well, I am one of the homeless right now. I'm actually living in an office that somebody I used to work with is letting me stay in, or else I'd be on the streets. I've got a near genius IQ. I've written three books. I've produced dozens of videos. I got injured, was out of work, and become homeless. And I'd like to say that when nobody thinks of it, the only way you're going to solve homelessness is to take care of the people around you. And I'm speaking to every person listening to this individually. I've never seen anybody, instead of giving $5 to the guy on the off-ramp, never let him stay in an empty room. I mean, that's how it's going to end. We're not going to get rid of homelessness through legislation, through any kind of program. It comes down to people helping the people around them. Most people are homeless just because they don't have family and friends to help them get through a hard situation.
Well, we have to remember that homelessness is like a gaping wound. And when you're currently experiencing it, you have to move on it now, particularly if you're a mother and you have children. We have to get away from the point where people freeze to death in cars and under bridges and stay in deplorable conditions with their children because they don't believe that they have a right to literally stay alive. And certainly the Kensington Welfare Rights Union has never been in favor of taking away from government responsibility. As we keep people alive tonight, we also make sure that the next morning that we're down holding a finger at the people that we think are responsible.
Hey, you guys have put on an excellent show so far. I've been listening to it for the whole 14 hours.
Oh, wow. Thank you very much.
I'd just like to say I am homeless, but I've never been homeless a day in my life. I'm a resident of the planet Earth, state of confusion, and I'm a Vietnam veteran. The spiritual side of this whole homeless thing is people have to start learning to live together no matter who they are or where they come from, no matter what their spiritual background may be, no matter what their problems may be. I don't believe it's homeless by choice. It's circumstance and choice maybe, but not just by choice.
Well, are you homeless by choice, would you say?
No, sir. I'm fully medically disabled right now.
Okay.
I believe because of Agent Orange in Vietnam, I'm not sure. I have cancer. I just got it. Well, it's in remission right now.
I'd just like to say that I really believe that in America there is still an active belief in the democratic possibilities. I think it still dwells at the very center of our American experience. We just have to make it real again.